Hello.
Hello.
We've already done this joke.
Okay, here we go. In 3, 2.
Are you guys like to beat things with, like, dead horse?
1.
Not that.
What can
That's
I?
That's a horrible joke.
What are you saying? That my jokes suck?
Yes.
Oh.
Hi, I'm Will Wheaton. I know, right? You're listening to Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed episode number 120. I'm sorry to break this to you, Professor, but Ultravox is going to break up in just a few years' time. But don't worry, they're going to get back together in 92 and break up again in 96. And then get back together in 2008. And they're still together.
Really?
Yeah.
That I didn't know.
I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you guys?
This pleases me.
Here's your random bit of trivia for this episode.
I didn't even know who Audiovox was before this episode. I had no idea. Must be a Britpop band.
It is a Britpop band. I heard the name. I can't name any of their songs.
I thought Audiovox was like a brand of electronic or something.
It wasn't a Walkman. I didn't recognize it.
No, it was definitely a Walkman.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what I mean. Is he says Audiovox. I love it.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I thought.
That's not what that is.
That's a Sony Walkman. Maybe they couldn't use Sony. Maybe that's why he called it Audiovox. But then I got it later when he was asking about them splitting up.
Yeah. How are you guys?
You should totally open with some Audiovox. You're going to have to search for some Audiovox.
Do some digging now.
Which, if you're listening to this, obviously he did. Maybe.
If I didn't, I will have cut this part out.
Did you guys have a slow of a week as I did?
Yeah. No, because I was not on my normal schedule. Sorry.
Yep, I still worked overnight all week.
And you got another week of it.
Another week of it.
Although it sounds like you might possibly be back on Friday.
I don't anticipate it being back by Friday. I did start Grimm, finally.
TV series?
It's not bad.
Not bad. You're watching it at work?
No, I'm watching it here.
I thought maybe you just had some time.
No, I'm
going to build that show and then
about three quarters of the way through Darth Plagueis, the book.
Oh, you're reading that.
Yeah. Cool. Which it's really good. I highly recommend it.
Mel and I finished Batman Beyond this week, including Batman Beyond the movie, or Return of the Joker.
Oh, the
post-Batman.
Animated series.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Which, the more I've watched Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, the more I'm convinced it's probably one of the top three greatest written Batman stories ever.
I've read that a lot.
It's really well done.
But yeah. Do you really need to see all of Batman the Animated Series and all of Batman Beyond to appreciate how good it is?
It helps, but no. You can totally jump into it.
Okay.
And just enjoy it for what it is. Cool. I made Mel sit through 7 seasons of television to get to it, but
it's good.
Batman
television.
Beyond that long, or
no?
We were
all four animated series to get to Batman Beyond, which was
how
three
many,
seasons.
It was three. Mm-hmm. Batman Beyond really went three
it went
seasons.
Three, yeah.
Wow. I tried watching it. I didn't think it was all that good.
Oh, it's far superior to animated. Mm. Yeah, the Batman animated series.
Well, I tried. I watched probably about a half a season, and I gave up.
Oh, it's so good. So good. It's on Netflix now.
Yeah.
I don't know about Return of the Joker.
I don't think that one is.
I don't think that one is.
But the Avengers is. Justice League, I'm sorry.
Oh, the cartoon Justice League.
Yeah, Justice League.
That's what we're getting ready to start now. Yeah. Because technically there's an episode at the end of Justice League that kind of is the cap end stone for Batman Beyond.
How long did Justice League go?
2 seasons of Justice League, 2 seasons of Justice League Unlimited.
Oh, okay. So the entire run of Justice League is on.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming, since they added a whole bunch of Cartoon Network stuff.
Yeah.
Clone Wars on there yet?
Nope.
You've seen it all, though, haven't you?
No.
You own 2 seasons of it, though.
Yep, haven't started it yet.
You haven't even started those?
I watched the movie and was like, this is all right. But
Mason and I watched the first 2 seasons that I borrowed from you, but then I didn't go any further than that. So I was waiting to borrow your 3rd season.
I watched season 3 and then fell off after that.
Yeah,
I've heard it just keeps getting better and
better. It does.
And better and better.
Seek it out.
Ended on a real high note, so...
But no more.
I had a friend in town, so I've off and on been hanging out with him. So That's pretty much the excitement, though. We went shot pool and went out last night, had some drinks.
I apologize. I completely forgot to tell you that Elrod was in town.
I know. He told me. And then I was like, dang it, I wish I'd have known that because I would have made some time to go see him.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I forgot. Yeah. He said he'll come back.
Catch him next round.
Well, he's
and it won't be 7 years.
It makes it sound like he's going to be back in what, October?
Probably for the wedding. He'll come back for Will James. Or James and Kara's wedding.
Well, I'm going to that. So. Cool. Sean may have to call me.
Don't leave it up to me.
I'll call you and tell him. I'll remind you.
Where are you at?
Dude, where you at?
Oh, yeah. Keith's getting married this weekend.
Is that today?
That sounds bad, but that was the first wedding.
That was the first time.
Yeah. Years ago.
Years and years and years.
Years and years.
Years and years.
All right.
Back in the long, long ago.
We're going to rush this one along because we've found out that we have lots of news. No, we don't. We have a couple items of news, but we do have a lot of feedback we want to get to this week. And so let's move on to news first, guys.
Oh, some 50th anniversary news.
Doctor Who News Flash.
This is a Doctor Who News Flash.
Another person has joined the cast.
For John Barman? 50th.
Not John Barman.
Christopher Eccleston?
Not Christopher Eccleston.
Paul McGann.
Not Paul McGann. Gemma Redgrave?
Maybe not Paul McGann.
We're going to get to that in a little bit.
Gemma Redgrave is returning to the role of Kate Stewart.
Woo-hoo! Which they got that out.
Means we probably will see some unit.
We will. they got that out right before they filmed some of the filming was taking place with her. So a bunch of set pictures leaked.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're shooting in and around London. I've seen some of the pictures. And they know that there's no way. Both the guys went like hanging from the TARDIS. BBC is doing this right. There's no way to close these sets as much as they're doing. So they realize that this is going to come out anyway, so they're getting the jump on it. I appreciate their efforts on that. So excited to see Kate return.
Yeah.
And
did you guys see the other picture of that shooting time?
I saw a string of them. What are you referring to?
One of the scientists walking with the doctor and Clara.
Wearing the, I don't think she was a scientist. I think she was a production line somebody
you
or
think
another.
So?
I think she was behind the scenes.
I thought she was a scientist.
She was wearing a smaller version of a fourth Doctor scarf.
Oh, I saw that too. Yeah. I think she. Yeah, I thought the same thing as that she was walking somebody like a script editor.
I thought I saw somewhere that they were saying it was somebody who had done the research on the Doctor, and maybe it was just that speculation that we were discussing last week.
Yeah, could be. As we've all said now, we'll wait until we actually see something.
If it appears in the episode, I will squeal a little bit. If it does not, oh well.
Yeah, I just the look of it. It didn't look like it. Just looked like somebody escorting them somewhere. Is what it looked like to me. But it could have been.
It could go either way. But the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann, also has been speaking out about the 50th, saying that, hey, it could still happen.
It's not off the table.
11th hour stuff happens all the time with actors.
He said that with Eccleston not coming in, there's still room for Moffat to maybe make some arrangements to bring 8 in. So speculative, but he's got a point. There's a lot of times that actors, you know, get the call at the 11th or 11:30 and you know, they get the call on Friday and they're working Monday. So it could possibly happen. And it sounds like he's amenable to that. So that's what's cool about it.
Sounds like he's hoping for that.
It sounds like, he would drop everything and go shoot some, you know, new series Doctor Who.
And if everybody didn't see, physically, none of the recurring Doctor or the classic Doctors could be there because they're all in Australia.
All in Australia, yeah.
So.
All except for Tom.
Ploy.
Yeah. But reshoots, I mean, anything's possible with reshoots.
Well, and
or pickups or whatever.
I also read somewhere that BBC supposedly is floating, and I'm sure it's one of those crazy rumors. Again, in my fanboy head, I've already retconned it because I know why they're doing it. But BBC supposedly is floating one of these things that they might use some sort of archival footage of all of the past Doctors in order to get them into the special.
Well, yeah.
Kind of like that they did for 11th Hour.
Yeah.
11th Hour, Next Doctor, Human Nature, although that wasn't archival.
Yeah. But now my personal belief is that they're floating that story because they're actually going to do it.
It could be.
But you didn't hear that.
That might be a way that they're trying to placate fans a bit, too, by floating that rumor.
Yeah.
Well, exciting news, so we'll look forward to that in November. All right.
And that's it for news.
Let's move on to feedback.
Yeah.
It had to be this. You knew that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was no choice here.
We expected none less.
Down on a planet with an alien bazaar, a child queen singing, it's kind of bizarre. Do 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 do. Russian sub and a warrior on ice. Dr. Blow us up. It's a roll of the dice. Do, 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 do. In touch with our fans. Wanna hear some feedback from you. I don't have a lyric here because I can't think of one to go with that. And I'm hungry for feedback. Straddle the line between Discord and rhyme. Want to hear some feedback from you. It's not rhyming at all. Emails are live with thoughts on the line. And we're hungry for feedback.
We can sort of forgive you. We can sort of forgive you for that because we just got the episode last night.
And I know you didn't see
you were pressured
today.
To put something together.
I was pressured
today,
to put something together.
We'll give you
I struggled and struggled.
I'll give you kudos for.
Smell like I sound, I'm lost in a crowd. Where do you go with that? I mean.
I'll give you kudos for turning
well, lost in a crowd could have worked for the Rings of Akatakan.
Akatakan.
That's true.
Anybody disappointed now that we actually know how it's pronounced?
Akatin.
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 No.
Akatin.
I figured Keith would go on and say Akatakan all Akatakan. Can, but
I just Akatin.
No.
Really?
Akatin. That's no, I rewatched
it's
the
not
episode.
Even Akatin. It's Octon.
Octon.
Is it just Octon?
Yeah,
I thought it was Akatin. Akatin.
Octon.
Yeah. I'm disappointed.
Even,
that that's
even more
pronounced.
So, it doesn't look like how it's spelled.
No, it
definitely
doesn't look like
it's spelled. Akenhotten. I like that one. I like pronouncing that H. Akenhotten.
Akenhotten.
All right. Who's first?
First up, new writer. Feed Megan.
feedback.
Oh, looking at the wrong place on the page.
Hi, feedback. How are you?
Wow, what are the chances we get feedback from somebody named
That's
feedback?
Some serendipity there.
It's incredible.
Comment question. Hello, hello, Vortex fellows. I've been listening for quite a while now. Gosh, since the beginning of Series 6, I think. I figured it was time to express how much I love this podcast. I look forward to it every week, and it makes my normally abysmal commute via bike much more enjoyable.
Somebody else while traveling, we could be in trouble.
And on bike, too.
She's on a bike, yeah.
Well, I obviously adore your takes on everything Doctor Who. I almost always agree with your overall opinions. Your tangential side quests are just as wonderful, so please continue down whatever rabbit holes pop up during future podcasts. Once I get off morning or overnights, I promise we'll get back to tangents.
Speaking
we're kind of rushed again this week because Keith's got to go to work in 2 hours.
Now, the Rings of Akawatsu.
I like that one, too.
That's a good one, too. This was an episode with a plot that was average, visuals that were stunning, emotion that was deep and heartfelt, and acting that honestly gave me chills. Matt Smith, who is my doctor, somehow continues to awe me every episode, and his speech to the sun god was like a punch to the guts. With the fist made of awesome. Clara was absolutely wonderful, and I especially appreciate her taking the time at the end to tell the doctor that she was traveling with him as herself and how she refused to be a stand-in.
How? Here, here.
Kind of wish Martha had been treated this way in Series 3, but I digress. Closing thoughts. Susan reference! Why doesn't the TARDIS like Clara? That seems ominous. And finally, in his his amazing ending speech, the Doctor mentions universes where the laws of physics were devised by a mind of a madman. Omega, anyone? This brings me to my overarching super theory that I've had since the end of Series 5. Omega is behind everything. He is the voice that said silence will fall and blew up the TARDIS. He is behind what the Silence are up to, and he is the big bad for the 50th. Seeing as how he was the first villain in the first ever multi-doctor story, I wouldn't put it past Moffat to bring him back for the anniversary. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on the episode, and hope you all had lovely weekends. Megan.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Megan. Thank you for writing, and once again, we're a little humbled that you like us.
Yes.
And I like your theory.
Omega.
Omega.
I like that. That's
although that's not what I thought of when I heard that speech, but we'll get to there in a minute.
Thank you, Megan. That's not who you thought of?
No, actually.
He even says it.
Yeah. He doesn't say Omega.
He says a Madman.
Well, you went, please tell me you didn't go to Virgin Universe.
I did, actually.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. No.
Well,
obviously it's not.
Then again, we don't know where it goes.
Well, obviously it's not, because I don't see the TV series making a drop in the 50th anniversary. I guess that's where I could see that, where they've done it in the past, where they've done drops for the audio in the books. I can't see them doing this in this year. I think that is obviously a reference to Omega, because we're getting so many drop clues about his past in this series, just as nods to this is the 50th year.
Oh, and then I also saw a meme that's probably Craig put together.
Would you leave Craig alone? Just take him off of your news feed.
He's not in my news feed. Everybody just shares it.
All right.
But this one I was okay with. I liked it. It was his speech with images to it. And it also included the Celestial Toymaker and the Master of Fiction Land.
Oh, yeah, that was another one that I saw referenced.
Yeah, and Omega. And I was like, oh. And later I thought of Omega, but I didn't think of the other two.
I have to be honest, when he launched into it, I did think of Divergent Universe, until he added down the end, because he talks about a universe, blah, 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 created by the mind of a madman, and then I was like, oh, that's Omega. So I flipped back the other way.
Interesting, but I did think Divergent Universe somewhere else first, because as he said it, I went, oh my God, he's talking about Omega. Wow, interesting. All right, let's move on. Next is
Mark.
Mark's this one, okay. Mark writes, gents, thanks for creating one of the funniest moments ever recorded. The bagpipe rant.
And this is why I made sure you didn't read this one.
And the other conversations in that podcast had me crying with laughter.
We just hope you weren't driving.
I didn't get to talk about it. I heard that you had a moment outside when the 501st Legion went marching into PlanetCon with bagpipes, and you were all conflicted because it was Star Wars, so it was cool, but it was bagpipes, so it wasn't.
I wasn't conflicted. I took a picture of it, because it was just, there was some serendipity before you got there.
Yeah. I run away.
I actually was going to run video, but by the time I got my video getting ready to go, they were already finishing up. But I did snap a picture, and I didn't realize until I put the picture up on Facebook that you and Blake were back in the background watching bagpipes. So I tagged you.
Also, I thank you for helping me to understand the attraction of Patrick Troughton's Doctor. I'd seen bits of his episodes previously, but nothing really stood out and made me want to explore any further. After hearing you talk about The Mind Robber, I had to get a copy and watch it. Thank you, US Netflix. I'm in the UK, but where there's a will, there's a way. The overall impression I was left with as reviewing was how sophisticated it was. That may sound strange, but a lot of classic Who leaves me with the feeling that the writers and directors weren't that interested in details and thought they could get away with lazy scripts or plots, as it was only for kids. On another note, I see that you're watching the TV movie this week. I guess it was obviously from last week. Did we miss one? Okay. If they ever make another Doctor Who film, it has to be an Eighth Doctor adventure based on the last great Time War. Sod Eccleston. If he doesn't want to be associated, then Paul McGann should be given another chance to shine.
Amen.
Unless they decide to create an offshoot series of Doctor Who based purely on the Eighth Doctor, then to me this is the only way we'll get to see McGann playing the Doctor outside of the Big Finish adventures. Thanks again for the show, Mark Dowding. Thank you very much, Mark.
Absolutely. And I think he was just, this did come to us this week. I think he was just, well, he's a week behind.
He's a week behind, maybe.
And
we did watch the movie last week.
Mark, I'm curious, was that 2 weeks ago that Netflix pulled all Classic Who?
What?
In the UK.
In the UK? Did they really?
I don't... They did it within the past week. It might have been further...
So you've heard is that
that's what I've seen reported, yeah.
So Netflix in UK, I saw that, has, and no, I said, Doctor Who up.
And I went to our Netflix.
And ours is still there.
Ours is still there. Okay. And I was like, oh, that
weird.
Sucks.
I can't see them doing that in the US. Although, I used to see that terminate around this time, their license terminate around this time. Because back in the day, you could see how long something was going to be on Netflix. It would say until X amount of date. Or
yeah, if it was in your instant queue.
Right.
Here's the deal, Netflix. If it's in my instant queue, you can't pull it because I haven't got to it yet.
I've already lost stuff in my instant queue.
About this time of year.
Casanova was one of them.
About this time every year, this time of year, their license must be up. And so, I don't know, maybe we'll see those go away.
Hopefully they'll get them back up for the UK crowd.
I think that it makes sense for the US to keep them in there, because we still don't have the classic fan base here, and I think that's a that's a drive for a lot of people to go to Netflix and view those there. They're not going to run out and buy them if they haven't tried anything
yet. Oh, yeah, absolutely not.
Well, and we've had, what, two emails come in consecutive weeks now with people talking about how great Patrick Troughton is mm-hmm. that they hadn't seen him before, plus Daphne. So,
right.
I mean, it's definitely out there.
That's true.
Needs to be.
All right, let's move on. Next is?
Scott.
Scott from Philly. Scott writes, comment question, hello, Kansas crew. First, I want to congratulate the Wichita State Shockers for their outstanding performance in the Final Four. If you didn't have to face an inspired Louisville team, I wouldn't be surprised if they won at all. As it happened, they gave the Cardinals their closest game in the tournament. That's absolutely true. It was a
here,
was a
here. Congrats,
run.
Wichita State.
Congrats to Wichita.
Yeah.
The rings of Akaten. Akaten.
Akaten.
Love it. It is one of my top 10 new Who stories. In fact, I actually believed when I checked the Who podcast on Monday, the story would be basking in the glow of fanboy love. I'm 46 and should know better. I was genuinely shocked by the indifference to hate so many of my favorite podcasters felt. As the week progressed, I did find more positive reviews, but this is obviously one of the most diverse stories in years. Here's my complaint about it. The SFX, or special effects, with the space scooter flying didn't work for me. Apart from that, I loved everything else. One of the biggest complaints I've heard is that it wasn't Doctor Who. I hate that, because I think the premise of the show can include anything as long as it's presented in the right way. The story worked for me as a fairy tale. I think people forget or dismiss the kid-friendliness aspects that should be important. The connection between Clara and the Queen is amazing. There was no talking down to the Queen. Loved how Clara told her story about confronting and overcoming fears in a story all about the importance of individual life stories. I love the Doctor's talk and how each person is unique, important, and made of stardust. The resolution was nonviolent, about everyone joining together, a personal sacrifice. If you want and always expect straight science fiction, there are a lot of holes. But as a fairy tale, we see the power of a leaf can save the universe. Seven other things I love.
Very specific.
He's got them all combined here. So here we go. Number one, the story of the leaf. Number two, all the aliens somewhere far from Earth and Clara is the only Earthling. When was the last time that happened? Three, how Clara reacted to her first trip off Earth with a mixture of caution and curiosity. Number four, the way the alien religion was addressed, meaning there was respect for most of the traditions and the way it brought people together, and defeating Grandfather didn't involve everyone having to lose faith to do it, or at least it's open to interpretation. Number five, the Doctor saying he'd been there before with his granddaughter. Number six, real trading currency needing real personal value. And number seven, Clara confronting the Doctor and telling him she's her own person.
Woot.
Woot. I'll stop. Now, I'm curious to hear everyone else's opinions. I do think this is one of those stories that will grow in appreciation over time. At least we'll all agree on the Ice Warrior story, right? Right? Take care. Very good. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate that.
Next up is Kirk. He says, Vortex crew.
Go ahead.
Now that Planet...
We didn't miss David, did we?
No, we're going to him next.
Gotcha. Okay. Sorry, I apologize. I have these in order, but I don't have that screen up, so my bad.
Kirk writes, now that Planet Comic Con 2013 is over, I'm going to try and provide more feedback for the podcast. I'm starting with a long one, so my apologies in advance. It was absolutely wonderful that you guys and your gang were able to be a big part of the convention this year. Planet Comic Con continues to grow, and we couldn't have pulled it off without the help of the team of volunteers. Every single member of the Vortex group saved my hide at least once. From Keith racing to the soundboard when we lost audio just before the Adam Baldwin panel, to Jessica serving as a human microphone stand for an hour during another panel. And Sean, don't fret about any weirdness while moderating that Land of Oz panel.
And thanks for your support.
I moderated the Oz panel the last time that Eric Schanhauer and Scotty Young were at Planet Comic Con. It was during a massive blizzard, so we only had an audience of about 9 people. As you noticed, Eric takes Oz very, very seriously. So I felt like I was putting my foot in my mouth with every question.
Yeah, but I bet you didn't ask him,
do you like the Wizard of Oz?
I was delighted to hear your panel with Daphne Ashbrook on the podcast. With the crazy convention schedule, I didn't get to see it live. Likewise, I'm looking forward to hearing the Doctor Who fandom panel with Josh Adams.
By the way, I'm still working on that. And the audio is a little touchy because it came off of another device, so I'm still working with it.
Cool.
By the way, I offer my apologies to all the sardines who had the cram in the tin can for that panel. Like I told Sean, I've learned my lesson. Doctor Who never goes in the small panel room again. Most of my celebrity encounters were brief. I only spoke with Daphne Ashbrook as she and Vito were packing up their gear to leave. She insisted that I must go to Ken Deep's L.I. Who convention later this year. I thought she might take my kids hostage until I promised to book my tickets. My family and I escorted Will Wheaton to his charity tabletop game event. To avoid drawing attention, he put his head down and kept quiet while we walked through the hall, but loosened up once we were away from the crowds. He's a funny, charming guy. I was backstage with him and a number of the other big-name guests, but I try to avoid bothering them. Moving on to Doctor Who, let's talk about the Rings of Akhtan and Cold War. Akhtan had a lot of small bits to like, even though I'm still befuddled about what was going on at the end. The interplay between the Doctor and Clara, and between Clara and Mary, was wonderful and sparkling. I'm probably not the only person to think that the plot fell apart in either the script or direction, though. I also found most scenes with the mummy to be unconvincingly directed. I became acutely aware of watching actors on a stage, which is never a good thing. All in all, though, I'm willing to look past my befuddlement and give this episode a mild thumbs up based on the great performances in the first half.
There's that divisiveness.
Yeah. Likewise, I don't think Cold War is a classic, but it had the strong elements to make it enjoyable. We didn't get a big dose of Dr. Clara chemistry, but the use of the Ice Warrior outside his armor was surprising and the pace was quick. I'll nitpick a bit. The Cold War element would have been much more effective if the actors used a bit of a Russian accent. Also, the story had several obvious writer shortcuts, like the convenient appearance of the Ice Warrior ship at the end and the disappearance of the TARDIS at the beginning. Why in the world would the Doctor program the TARDIS to leave when he's in trouble? Isn't that exactly when he would want to have it close? I was also a bit stymied by the Professor Grisenko's interest in 80s Western pop music. It seems like it was only shoehorned into the script to give Clara a feeble excuse to sing lyrics about a wolf. A bad wolf, maybe? Or perhaps it's important that we've had two episodes in a row with singing. Who knows? Well, yeah, who knows, I guess. Okay, I've hogged enough of the podcast. You might not have time for tangents if I keep going. Till next time, Kirk.
Very good, Kirk. We enjoyed our time at Planet Comic Con, and thank you so much for giving that opportunity to us.
That's an interesting theory. Two episodes in a row with singing.
Maybe Doctor Who is turning into a musical.
No, I figured it out. The villain for the 50th anniversary, it's not Omega.
It's music?
It's the DJ. No. You remember the DJ from that Colin Baker episode?
Yeah, but he wasn't a bad guy in that. Yeah,
he is
the Dalek
now.
Episode.
But he is now.
Yeah, right. All
right. And if you believe that, I have some oceanfront land in Missouri that I'd like to unload cheap.
Next up is
David.
David writes, Doctor Who, or How I Learned to Tolerate the Ballad of the Old Jack-O-Lantern Planet, which transitioned into homesick, emo, naked ice warrior action, which I loved. David, 1,000 points for the best feedback email title ever. Dear Vortex guys, if that subject line didn't tell you all about my opinions on the Rings of Akhtan and the Cold War, then I apologize for air and time wasted actually reading it aloud. The Rings of Akhtan. Well, yeah. I literally cannot decide on how I feel about it. I loved the Doctor's speech, especially the aggressive delivery of You Have It All. I really liked the song sung by Merry and the residents of the Rings, but so many things fell flat on their faces faster than a clumsy person with undone shoelaces. The Vigil were underused to the point where I forgot about them completely. The whole, the mummy is actually just the way we're going to wake up the actual threat, felt a bit unneeded to me. Doesn't really fill me with confidence about Hyde, Neil Cross's other story this season. Cold War, on the other hand. Oh my word, what the hell was that? I'm pretty sure that was what was referred to in mainstream culture as perfection, or at least damn close to it. David Warner stole the show. And sure, the big reveal of what an Ice Warrior, or Martian, or even Saurian, depending upon what you want to call it. I saw someone refer to it as Randall from Monsters, Inc. online somewhere. Actually, looks like it was a bit unneeded. But everything else was superb. Skaldic. Is that how it's pronounced?
Skaldic.
To me, is the most memorable villain so far this series, and Nick Briggs did a fantastic job voice-wise. All the alien references were well done, and oh my word, we got a Crotons reference with the HADS. To sum up, Octon, meh. Cold War, bravo. Sorry for the length of everything, but some would say size doesn't matter. I'll let myself out before hitting any more innuendos.
Divisive. Wow.
Thank you, David.
Interesting. All right.
I'm kind of really curious to know where you guys are going to fall on
this. Yeah, I'm curious to know where you guys are going to fall. Up next.
Holly.
Holly from Wisconsin.
Or not Glenn's Holly.
She writes, The Rings of Akhtun and the Cold War. I keep wanting to say Akhtun. I wasn't even thinking I was going to do that this week.
For Friday Night Who this week? Akhtun.
Hey guys, great last podcast. Love the bumper for the start of the show, and the panel with Daphne Ashbrook was fantastic. Loved all the pictures that you shared on Facebook over the weekend that Planet Comic Con happened. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Glad you enjoyed. The Rings of Akhtun, or Akhtakin. Gotta admit, I love the pronunciation. You got to find out a little more about Clara and her family. Loved the scene when she and the doctor were wondering about the market area and the doctor's comment about being a grandfather at one time. The look on Clara's face as he raced off and she ran off after to catch up, something tells me that she might be bringing that up sometime in the future. The layout of the market reminded me a little of the market area from the episode The Fires of Pompeii, minus all the aliens.
I thought the same thing.
Clara and the doctor's interactions. Ooh, can't read tonight. Clara and the doctor's interactions with Merry were very cool. Eleven really has a way with kids at any age. The vigils were creepy. I didn't see that coming. And the monster in the box was actually the grandfather.
Wasn't
actually the grandfather at all. Just his alarm clock. That's one heck of a snooze button, if you ask me.
If I had that thing sitting next to my bed, I don't think I'd ever be late in the morning. My God.
Well, I know what you're getting for Christmas. The Cold War.
A grandfather in a box? We should totally market and patent this. Dear BBC.
The Cold War. This was a good episode. Was laughing out loud when the doctor exited the TARDIS thinking they landed in Vegas. Loved the Elvis-style sunglasses he was wearing. I wouldn't be too surprised if River confiscates them or uses them as target practice when she sees them. Was a little surprised that the TARDIS disappeared so quickly in the beginning of the episode, and that both the Doctor and Clara were still able to understand the Russian crew, and the crew was also able to understand them. The TARDIS has a very powerful long distance transition matrix. Skaldic coming out of his suit
looks weird in print, doesn't
it? Yeah,
yeah.
Was a plot twist I didn't see coming. Loved the scientist and how he bonded with Clara. Speaking of Clara, she really stayed calm under the pressure of landing in the sub and having to act as the go-between with Skaldic. I'm going to wrap this up here, seeing as there are two episodes to be talked about. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on both episodes. Holly from Wisconsin. Thank you, Holly.
Thank you, Holly.
We'll be giving you our reviews shortly.
But first, Mark. He says, and the cats in the cradle.
You've got to sing that.
And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon. A little boy blue and the man on the moon. Hey, guys. Mark Lee here. Long time no feedback. I recently rediscovered Traveling the Vortex after going through a little bump in my life, and it has helped me get through tough times. A loss, a breakup, and a whole lot of unfinished work is not a good combination in life.
Ooh, sorry to hear that, Mark.
Yeah. But it's also made me think a lot about Doctor Who. A doctor is often accused of meddling with time. But if you were given a time machine and were given all of time and space to wander, especially if you're in a difficult stage in your life, then you're bound to end up interfering. Whether you intend to or not.
Refuge, I say, I suppose.
I'm currently sat in the library with my friend Olivia, and I've just asked her, if we could run away in a TARDIS, where would you like to go first? And normally, if someone asked me this, I, like Clara, would have no clue. But she, without skipping a beat, said, the Middle Ages. We'd find King Arthur. We'd sit at a round table with him. Cheers. I was stunned. And I asked her how she'd explain that neither our knowledge or clothes didn't fit in with the period. To which she replied, we talked to Merlin first, obviously. He was a pretty open-minded wizard, and he'd believe we'd arrived in the future in a magical blue box. Which rendered me speechless. Why has the doctor never thought of this?
On earth is this Olivia? She's smart as a whip.
Well, I think the problem is the doctor's mistaken for Merlin most of the time.
Yeah.
He was Merlin.
Oh, and about cold blood, I think he means cold war, I have a question. What language do ice warriors speak? Do they speak Russian or Martian? Unless ice warriors have a Russian translation thingamabob, I don't know how we could talk to them in a language that didn't exist 5,000 years ago when he was frozen. At first, do you guys want to touch that?
Well, briefly. I mean, if we looked back at the previous episodes with the Ice Warriors, not including the Peladon ones, because there's a different idea there, but with the ones that are fawn out in the Ice Warriors, the original, they automatically start talking to the Doctor and the Americans in that, or they weren't American, they were British, but the humans in that era. And so I have to presuppose that the TARDIS matrix reaches out to others close by as well, and perhaps you don't have to just travel in the TARDIS. That perhaps there's some fidgeting there with the TARDIS.
And if the TARDIS is as sentient as we believe, it would be smart enough to recognize, oh, that's an alien. They're going to be interacting with that. Better make it speak their language.
So that's just my opinion. So anybody connected to the Doctor at the time that there's... I mean, it's an excellent post question. It's a fantastic question, but you'd have to discount a massive amount of classic Who in order to explain that away, because there are a lot of aliens that are already interacting with other species, humans or whatnot, in classic Who before the Doctor even shows up with the TARDIS. So, I mean, I think it's one of those things that, for the necessity of the story, Martians are able to speak English. or Russian, for that matter.
Hey, Mark, we'll explain later.
At first, I wasn't sure how I felt about the Ice Warrior leaving its armor. But as soon as I saw an Ice Warrior without its shell suit, it won me over. One of my favorite quotes was, my race is dead, but now there will be a second red planet, red with the blood of humanity. There's no denying that the writing in this episode was fantastic. It really makes me want to rewatch the old Ice Warrior episodes, to think that they were created during the monster season of Doctor Who. Whilst the Daleks were about to leave the show for good, the show needed a new monster. So in Troughton's second series, we got the Yeti, the Great Intelligence, the Ice Warriors, and more of the Cybermen. And so far, all three have returned to classic, or returned to New Who.
The season.
The early years of Who.
The Yeti technically haven't, but the Great Intelligence.
The Great Intelligence, yeah.
The Yeti, I guess, rematerialized in the form of the Snowman, so.
The early years of Who were really great. Really were great. My favorite eras of classic Who were as follows. Troughton's era, Sylvester McCoy's era, Colin Baker's era, only after hearing him in Big Finish and realizing how much the character could have developed, Pertwee's era, as he is my classic Doctor after all, and then the first couple series of Tom Baker's era, Peter Davison's era. Not so much. Peter Davison's era, not so much. But I don't think I've ever hidden that fact that I've never liked the Peter Davison era. Sorry, Chrissy. Whatever happened to Moldwich? Haven't heard from him in the feedback section of late.
He still listens a lot. I talk to him briefly every once in a while on Twitter, but he's very busy. Very busy.
Just had another kid.
Oh, then he's even more busy. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He actually reached out to Sarah to make monsters for his kids.
That's right.
And by the time we shipped them like 2 months ago, they were still expecting, but... I believe I saw that the third one is
present. Well, I hadn't seen that. Present. I actually think I knew she was expecting.
Congratulations, Moldwich.
They were expecting. Yeah.
Anyways, I better get back to work. The library closes at 4, and I've got 2 textbooks to learn in 6 weeks, so I can either get to work or sit here waiting for the doctor to show up. I'm more inclined to pick the latter option. Thanks for continuing to be such great podcast hopes from Mark McMarmite.
And Mark sent a couple other follow-ups that we're going to hold off until maybe next week. So,
yeah.
All right.
Because we don't get to hear from Mark very often.
That's right.
We're going to spread the love.
Spread the love. All right. Next up is...
Chrissy.
Chrissy writes, pleasing the unpleasable. Dear Vortex Boys, I have a point I'd like to communicate to Who fandom in general, and I hope you three don't mind that I'm going to use the feedback section of your podcast to do it. But the past week saw some incredibly hideous words and actions from a certain section of Whovians, and I've got some grievances to air. I'll try to keep it PG, just in case Glenn's kids are listening. None of this is directed at you three. Just want to make that clear.
You don't know. You haven't heard our reviews
That's
yet.
That's true. I liked The Rings of Akhaten. A lot. I even said so on my blog. There were a lot of heartfelt themes and emotions going through that story, which resonated with me. Some of you didn't like that episode. Fine and good. We're not meant to like all the same things. But for the love of the mother of Rassilon and all her crazy nephews, do you have to be such babies about it? Not 2 minutes after I posted my thoughts to my blog and Twitter did I see such hate and vitriol against Stephen Moffat and Matt Smith and Jenna Louise Coleman and Neil Cross and maybe even going all the way back to Verity Lambert and Sidney Newman for creating the show in the first place. All because one story of Doctor Who did not meet all your fanboy criteria for a quote-unquote good episode. If you're going to be that way, why don't you curl up with your Talons of Wen Chiang DVD and your Tom Baker scarf and whine about how that was the only area of Doctor Who worth watching, because that's exactly how you're all acting. If that's how you're going to be, you can go on somebody else's parade and leave us alone to enjoy New Who and celebrate the 50th anniversary. Okay, boys, I'm done airing my grievances. Thanks for letting me do that. I really don't care that people didn't like that episode. I just didn't like the way many of them voiced their opinions. I don't know if that constitutes news or if you guys are even going to talk about it, and I apologize for bringing such a dark cloud into the discussion. But some of fandom's behavior in the last week was just terrible. And it wasn't everybody, not by a long shot. But they just seemed to be very vocal and everywhere. You can dislike an episode, and you can certainly say that you didn't like it and give all the reasons why. But there's no reason for all this weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. And here I realize none of you three have even said if you liked The Rings of Akhaten or not. I don't even think I've seen your reactions on Twitter or Facebook. But if any of you were going to join the Teeth Gnashers, you probably would have done so by now. Just one more reason, I appreciate how you guys review Doctor Who. So, thumbs up to all of you.
Let me say
this.
We're not going to talk about the episode yet, but I want to say I'm glad that I was apparently very blind to the reviews these last couple of weeks, because I did, or it would have been this last week that we'd have gotten the... Because I haven't listened to any podcasts this week, which I normally have by now, listened to one or two of my top shows. And I haven't read. I was very disconnected this week as far as online. I mean, just been so busy and consumed. I didn't know this was happening. So I
Me neither
had,
until Chris even mentioned it.
I might have come to this show with a different attitude, because I might have done the same rant she just did. So maybe she's done it for us. So anyway,
I think Planet Comic Con took us so far out of the element. I don't know. You guys watched the episode.
I did watch that night.
I didn't get to watch it until
I watched it when I got home.
I didn't watch Rings of Akhaten until Thursday night. That's how far behind we've been. So I stayed radio dark. I didn't go on Twitter a lot or Facebook or anything. So I've not seen a lot of things. Yeah. Now I have heard some of what she's saying.
Have you? Okay.
See, I haven't even.
Yeah, I'm.
And
I'm,
thought I was decently I'm plugged in all week.
She
I guess
said
they
that.
Weren't.
Somebody else commented on that earlier.
Yeah, there's very, very much a big divide.
Okay.
So. But we'll get there. Okay, I'm actually going to review something now. The Rings of Akhaten. I thought this story was absolutely gorgeous. It tugged at all the right heartstrings. It hit all the right notes, literally and figuratively. I loved Clara's character development. I loved that we get so much time with her at the beginning, exploring a new world and reaching out to people on this new planet, asteroid, planet thing, ring. It doesn't matter. I love that she tells the story of her mother to Mary and that it helps Mary overcome her fear of messing up the song. I love the idea of stories and songs making up the souls and memories of her people that the parasite gas god thing feeds on. I love the backstory of the leaf. I'm such a sucker for a good backstory, and Claire's parents' courtship was an absolute delight. The story made me evaluate some personal things in my life, and it reminded me a lot of The Beast Below in that regard, which is another story that I love because of all the ways it makes me think and feel. The Doctor's epic speech at the end was fantastic, as was his giving up of all of his memories. But I adored how it's Clara that shows that it's not the established memories that fill you the most, but the memories of what could have been. Things you miss by not very much, regrets and missed opportunities. Things that all humans have experienced with, but we don't often dwell on because they're too painful to think about. That's what brought the parasite god down, because those emotions are often the most potent. Those are unwritten stories, unlived memories, unmet best friends. Also, traditionally, music is how humanity has told stories, so there's one reason music features so heavily in this episode, and it's beautiful music at that. And that's what the leaf represents, and that is why Clara was so important and how she can defeat the parasite, and I don't think we've heard the end of this in her story arc. So when I find all these wonderful little emotional hooks in a story, I'm not terribly worried about how everyone else breathing in space, or how the people of Akaten are going to live without sunlight, or why the TARDIS translation circuit isn't working. I just take for granted that it's happening and things are going to be fine. Call it an emotional manipulation or whatever you want. But I just can't be bothered to care about all those silly little details at that point. And the Doctor saying he's been to Akaten with his granddaughter was a bonus emotional hook, and I loved it. Cold War! I enjoyed this story well enough. It was a fun running through corridor shoot-'em-up story. The Ice Warrior was fantastic, as with the idea of it breaking out of its armor and running around a leaky Soviet submarine terrorizing everybody. I know everybody's going fanboy giddy over the Ice Warrior, but I think this is what Warriors of the Deep was meant to be back in the day. A darkly lit enclosed space with monsters running around. It also made me think of Dalek, reintroducing a classic creature with just one of them, instead of a whole horde breaking down the doors. I thought there might be a scene with Clara connecting with the Ice Warrior the way Rose connected with the Dalek, but maybe that would have been too much. I love how Clara was kind of awkward and unsure when she gave the Ice Warrior salute, even though she was all gung-ho for going in there to talk to the thing. If I have a complaint about Cold War, it's that the pacing was all over the place. There were times that it felt like it was going fast. There were other times that I wondered where it was going, if it was going anywhere at all. I don't want to say it was boring, because it wasn't, but there were moments where it was probably the next closest thing to it. Though I think I listened to Hungry Like the Wolf about 10 times since I finished watching Cold War. Of all the places I expected to find a reference to Duran Duran, a Soviet submarine, was not one of them. Oh, and I loved the Daphne Ashbrook interview from Planet Comic Con, and in a bit of serendipity, I was browsing through Big Finish's Companion Chronicles looking for things to review for my big 50th anniversary blogging project, and I found the story that she and Yiji So are in, and I bought it. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'll be reviewing that in the course of my anniversary year reviews, so look for that in coming months. It was just cool that I found it so soon after hearing her on the podcast. That's all. That's it for me. Let's hear from the rest of your feedbackers. Chrissy. P.S. A bit of shameless self-promotion. Here's a link to my blogging project celebrating the 50th anniversary. There are only 3 posts so far. There will be more soon. And we will include that link in our show notes. And thank you, Chrissy. And as we kind of hinted, that we had some of that, but not maybe as much as we thought. So I think we'll kind of get into that when we get actually to our reviews. And we're still not there yet.
Nope. Still got two more feedbackers. Next up is Phil.
All right. And this is Odd Duck Phil. Phil writes, comment, question, comment, break it up, son, joke's over.
Not on this podcast.
Hey, who peekins? Sorry it's been a while. Life and all its surprises can certainly get the best of your free time. I don't mind telling you. Oh, I know how that is, Phil. Work's been busy, wife is 22 weeks pregnant, it's chaos around here. So anyway, yay, Doctor Who! Number one, the Bells of St. John, not the sum of its parts, Really enjoyed the episode, but when I look back at each part and see how good it really was, and then I look at the episode, it should have been better. Or I'm still coming off the Christmas episode was awesome high, and nothing they could have thrown at me would have mattered. I can kind of see that. I can kind of see
that. I can kind of see perception. That.
Number two, Rings of Octon. Octon. Also good. Love the currency system and the Doctor's I'm out of my league standoff at the end. And the music was top notch. But I could have done without the whole click your heels together three times, Dorothy, ending. For a show that prides itself on putting the science in science fiction, why do so many episodes end with emotion or belief of generic happy feelings somehow stopping the big bag? Bad. Now, I'm all for this type of ending. I really liked the Series 3 finale, for example. But given what the show usually strives for, it makes the sort of ending feel a bit jarring. Still a good episode. Number three, Cold War. To quote the Joker, and here we go. Best episode of the three so far. Great cast, fun scenario. Just made my day from the start to finish. If I had a complaint, and honestly, it wouldn't be me if I didn't, it's the Doctor's split-up plan. Really? You really split the party up to hunt down the spooky alien monster? Really? I guess I should be thankful that there was no spooky cabin or horny teenagers in the episode, or the whole group would have been doomed to death by horror tropes.
I thought the same thing. He says, we're going to split up and search the sub from top to bottom. And I went, that is the crappiest plan in the history. He has to come here to fire the missiles. Stay here. But I know, we got to kill people off.
Number four, David Warner.
Yay!
Okay, running out of time. Hope you all are well, and we'll try to have something in for next time. I'll duck Phil. Thank you very much, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
And last.
And a late bit ad, we should say.
A very late
Although,
bit.
Although, in our defense, we would normally be recording later.
It would still be close to the line. Brenda, we got your email just in time. Her subject line, I remember Eisenhower. Dear Vortex Gang. I had to chuckle last week when the three of you were joking about the earliest president you could remember. I can remember Eisenhower, so I trump you all. To get more topical, congratulations to the team for such a stellar weekend at Planet Comic-Con. I think it's great that the three of you are developing such an expert reputation in the Hugh community. And just think, I knew you win.
Expert reputations. My God in heaven, are we in trouble?
Now, settle in for some long feedback. I have been on Cloud 9 since the new episodes of Who began airing, and I have loved every one of them. And I am so happy with the great chemistry between Claire and the Doctor. I'm especially enjoying the many cheeky side comments by both of them, but especially by the Doctor. He has really hit his stride in these episodes, and I was interested to hear Moffat say something in one of the Doctor Who insider bits that were inserted into a commercial slots last night. He noted that Matt Smith has found his voice, and that all the writers are writing to that voice with great effect. He also said Doctor Who should be written, made, and produced by people who love it, because if you don't love it, you'll never put up with it, quite frankly. I chuckled at that comment, because it's so true. I have friends who aren't Whovians, and when I try to explain what I love about the show, they just look at me like I'm mental. Maybe I am, but it brings me joy, so who cares? About the Rings of Octon, I read...
She better pronounce her.
She did.
Octon.
Octon.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Brenda. I think you're wrong.
Octon.
Akahatan. It's Akahatan.
Octon.
I read Scott's comment on the Vortex Facebook page, and I agree wholeheartedly with this assessment. I had an unexpectedly powerful emotional reaction to this story, to the point that I actually cried a couple of times. Admittedly, the soundtrack was structured for emotion, and I'm a sucker for music, so when a story features people whose most sacred form of communication is singing, they had me at first note. I love the concepts of sharing stories and the memories as precious commodities, and Claire's gift of the leaf was a stroke of genius. The infinite, wonderful possibilities of days never lived. There were so many wonderful moments that made me smile. The Great Variety of Aliens, Shades of Star Wars Cantina, The Hilarious Pelvic Thrust Way of Greeting One Alien, The Communication by Barking, and The Doctor's Delight when the Clara did the same. His great expression when he momentarily considered using the Sonic as payment for the scooter, his reference to his granddaughter, and Clara's response. The way both of them interacted with the young queen in such a rich way, the Doctor joining in the singing. I could go on, but you get the point. I love the episode. And when the Doctor got going in his big rant at the evil god, it was like the Pandorica all over again, except this time he was ranting at a big jack-o'-lantern, and I didn't even mind. As for the Cold War, this was one of the best crafted stories I've ever seen on Who. It never dipped in interest for me, and I appreciated a good old straight thriller with no timey-wimey twist that required me to think hard, even though I do love timey-wimey as well. I haven't seen the classic Ice Warriors episodes, so I can't compare this one to those, but I did find this Ice Warrior to be terrifying, much like Alien. When he shed his armor and was moving around the ship like lightning, I appreciated the less-is-more views of the alien. The blur of him rushing past, or those hands on someone's head, that was so effectively creepy. The episode had a Hunt for Red October feel to it, and it was also reminiscent of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Which of us shall blink first? When the Doctor activated the red setting on a Sonic, I thought that the Who community was going to likely find fault with the overuse of the Sonic again. But I have to say that I'm totally fine with the ever-expanding uses for it. There once was a time not so long ago when the only thing I could do with a telephone was make a call with it. And then it was tethered to a cable and limited to a small area in my house. Now my phone travels with me everywhere, and I use it as a GPS, a flashlight, an alarm clock, a camera, for email, to surf the net, play games, order stuff, and on and on. It makes sense to me that as technology advances, the Sonic will be able to do more things. So I say, Sonic on, Doctor.
Very interesting point I hadn't thought of.
Remind me when we get to these episodes.
Yeah,
because
Keith kind of pointed that out when we had our Sonic discussion. That his Sonic just continues to evolve as he.
Yeah, but actually physically comparing it to a cell phone or to a phone in general, that they started off as this and now they do all of this. I would not have made. I agree, technology should advance, but I just never made that connection to it. So,
ironically, these two episodes are ones where you don't need that justification. I'll mention it when we get there.
Okay.
Yeah. They drop a line in where you don't have to explain to yourself how the Sonic is doing all this.
I can think of one, but I can't think of the other. Go ahead.
Okay. Continuing on. So, those are my reviews, and I look forward to hearing your collective insights. Before signing off, however, I have a few more thoughts to share about Chris Eccleston passing on the 50th anniversary episode. Even though I'm disappointed, I'm not comfortable with the negative feelings towards him that are being so being expressed by so many.
Or just me.
Diplomatic as ever.
Really, no one knows what factors influences this decision, and to speculate about his reasons for declining is just that, speculation. For all we know, he could have an offer for another project that conflicts with filming, or he could be sick, or any other thousands of reasons. Even if
sounds like you're speculating on why he turned it around.
He's going to be home washing his hair.
Even if he did decline simply because he doesn't feel any love for Who, he is certainly within his rights to do so. From what I've loved, he didn't have a great experience on his one season. So if he wants to leave it all behind, so be it. According to that article I posted on the Vortex Facebook page, Paul McGann feels that it's not too late for him or some of the other doctors to get called in for a few brief scenes. So if Eccleston's decision leaves the door open for others who do want to be involved, even better.
Agreed.
Indeed. I'm assuming that you've also seen the BBC America special about the companions that aired before the premiere on March 30th. I thought it was well done and offered some interesting insights. If you haven't seen it, let me know and I can get a copy of it to you if you wish. I And I close with a totally random question. Is the 11th Doctor the only one to fly three different TARDIS consoles? Just occurred to me as I watched him with his current console. So that's my long-winded feedback. I hope you all have a great week. Brenda in Atlanta. I don't think we did see the companion one, but we, from what we heard of it, we were kind of dismayed that they didn't only focus on New Who.
We didn't see it,
but we heard reports and weren't happy with it.
But if you can get us a copy, we'd love to see it.
We would love to give it a second chance.
Brenda, the first Doctor's console room evolved over his entire run, but it never changed so much that it was as different as it was with
it the was, it was more a matter of if we needed a bank of computers here to do something right, in the episode, right. Though a bank of computers suddenly
and
showed
the
up.
And the door switch sides.
And the door switch sides and that kind of stuff.
But yeah, from what I've seen of the second Doctor, because there's so much missing, I don't think his console room changed much. We didn't get a lot with Pertwee, so his console room remained the same because there was not a lot of TARDIS episodes because simply his TARDIS was grounded.
Yeah.
We did go into the TARDIS every once in a while and see that console room when he did fly later. And even with Joe, the room was slightly different at times, but again, the console was very much the same.
Baker had two.
Baker was the probably the most drastic change in console. His was simply, though, the explanation was it was a backup. It's a secondary console room. And so he had the brown paneling room, as I like to call it, the 1970s brown paneling.
Five had two
because Five got a refit for the 25th anniversary, which was the Five Doctors episode. Was that 20th anniversary? 25th anniversary.
25th anniversary for the Five Doctors.
For the Five Doctors.
Oh, no, it was 20.
It was 20.
Okay. It is 20.
So the 20th, 10 and 20. Yeah, 20th episode, or 20th anniversary. They did refret the console. Now, it's still similar. I mean, it's not as drastic of a change
not a
as
big
we get
change
with
them.
In
classic.
Aside from the...
It's not a noticeably different console room. I think it's a noticeably different console because it's got much more...
It's a lot more high-tech and lights and bleeping and colors. There's a lot more color to it.
A lot more color to it. The funny little trim on the...
But surprisingly enough, it remained that console all the way through to the end of Sylvester McCoy's era. It didn't change from that.
And then McCoy had the movie, so he technically had two.
McCoy had two because if you count the film, you obviously have to count the film. But when you factor in the film, McGann and he shared that one. Now, if you go into some Big Finish audio, I don't know that much. The console might have changed from that point as well. But on screen,
really,
no,
on
the
Big Finish,
unless
they say
one.
Something otherwise, you can imagine any console you want.
So, I think that probably if I looked back, that is, as far as drastically changing, the 11th Doctor has had three console rooms because he started with a Coral.
Although, to be fair, the Coral's crashing.
But he started with the Coral.
He's barely flying that one.
He went to the steampunk-ish.
See, I don't get a steampunk feel
actually,
from that
it's
one.
More of a junkyard feel.
Junkyard
because it
whimsy.
Has the
yeah.
old whimsy. Whimsy. Yeah. The steampunk is really the 8th Doctor's console.
Yeah.
And then this new one now. So,
interesting question.
All right. Very good.
Well, that's it for feedback.
Let's move on to our reviews of these two episodes.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yeah, we don't have any sort of
synopses
this week. Sorry, guys.
Okay, so I'm going to jump on this one first.
Go right ahead.
Because here's my thing. Rings of Akhenaten. I was away from it. I didn't watch it at Saturday night. I didn't do it with the... I'm going to push this button, silly.
Why?
I didn't.
That's
because that's the on-off button.
Yeah, but did you turn it off?
It's upside down.
Weird.
Anyway, I
can always turn mine on with this one.
Oh no, I never did it that way.
Okay.
So I didn't watch it until late in the week, and then Mel and I watched it, and I was a little conflicted from the standpoint that I think I liked everything about this story except for the story, which sounds a little weird, but. All of the moments, everything that everybody has brought up in feedback, and the Queen and the singing was fantastic, the currency, I loved the bazaar. I loved the fact that all of the different aliens that were in this. I mean, there were so many different varieties of aliens. And
this episode had me at hello, but as soon as I saw... Every time they introduced a new alien to me and them walking in the thing, it wasn't even so much. But when all of the aliens are sitting there in that room,
yeah.
And you know me, show me something that's not anthropomorphized animal. Yeah. Animal.
I thought of you while watching it.
I was going, it's like the Star Wars Cantina all over again.
It's like Christmas special.
I thought while watching, Glenn is going to have no complaints about any of these aliens, period. You know.
I kept looking for one. There's got to be one. There's got to be one. There's not.
A repeat even. That, no, oh, we're going to get a Jadoon or something. No, they were all different, unique. I mean, just
spent a lot of money.
There was one that was a little similar to a Hath, but it didn't care because it wasn't. It was still different.
It only similar because it had the green bubble thing.
It wasn't even green. It was like red, wasn't it?
It was green. I don't know what it was, but it was a bubble thing. But it didn't. It was a breathing apparatus.
Yeah.
But all the aliens were different in this, which was fantastic. I agree with you. I think they must have blown their entire budget on this episode because it looked like.
Well, here, if you look at this one and you look at the following one, Cold War.
The budget was
much smaller, so I wonder if they looked at that and they said, you know what, we can actually borrow from here.
Yeah.
Because you don't in Cold War, you don't even see the alien out of it. You don't see the ice warrior out of his suit much. You just see parts of it.
And we'll get to that.
Thank you for that, by the way.
As soon as it came out of the suit, which was such a, oh my God, that was cool. And then I was terrified that I was going to spend the rest of the episode going, oh, but it didn't look cool. Thank you for not showing it. Okay, but anyway, back talking. So all the aliens were fantastic. I love the use of the currency. I love the story of I was here with my granddaughter. The doctor's excitement of being somewhere. Her reaction to seeing this gigantic planet and rings and pyramid. And even the religious aspects of the story, that this is what they believe, that all life came from here.
It didn't qualify that was actually a religious entity, that it was actually a god. But it was what they believed
what
was
they
there.
Believed
and,
was
and,
there.
And the doctor made that very clear every time. Well, that's what they believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved all of that. I loved the queen. First of all, she's a fantastic actress. She was an adorable little girl. She had fantastic chemistry with Clara. Probably even better chemistry with the doctor. Any scene that the two of them were together in, it's got me all hyped and ready to go now. When is the doctor going to get a kid? We need to have a kid in the TARDIS with Matt Smith because he's so good with them. Oh, and the open. I'm with Chrissy. I'm a sucker for the backstory. The leaf, it was mesmerizingly beautiful.
Especially after seeing all the promotional footage with the leaf. It's in that wallpaper poster.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is that? As soon as I saw that, I was like, I was okay with it. And
I'll admit, as the story unfolded.
Did you forget about the leaf?
No. As the story unfolded, the beginning, the opening with about the leaf, about Clara's parents meeting, I didn't feel this way, but I thought in the back of my head that, oh, there's going to be some people that have a problem with this setting up in the fairy tale sense that we just left with Amy.
Yeah.
And that this is all kind of, you know, all of the imagery and the emotion and all of it tied up into one little leaf and you know, being the most important thing in the world. And I really thought in the back of my head, oh, there's going to be people that are going to be bothered by this. It didn't bother me, but I just knew, knowing some part of fandom, I knew that people were going to have a problem with that. So I suppose that's probably one of the things everybody's picking on. I don't know. Again, I've been very disconnected this week.
But I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
I just, the
whole, just down the line. And then I didn't mind the space scooter. I didn't mind the fact that some of the things that people apparently complain about, that we're breathing in space. It's like, really? You can't live on a ring of asteroids.
You can't believe there's an atmospheric bubble there.
I sort of maybe presumed there was something encompassing the market, which is one little piece of rock, and the temple, which is another piece of rock. I just kind of assumed there was some sort of atmospheric bubble around that.
Cities, civilizations in that ring.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't it all be encompassing?
Well,
I didn't get the impression that all seven pieces were all wrapped in one bubble. But it could be. Yeah,
why not? I mean,
it could be.
If you need to stretch it that far to get it to work for you, stretch it that far.
Just accept it and move on.
I never even thought of that as an issue until one of the...
I didn't either.
Yeah. I just ran with it. It's like, sure, yeah, we're growing. The jack-o'-lantern sun, cool. The special effects in this were amazing.
It was not a sun. Let's make it clear.
The entity.
Let's make it clear that it was either an asteroid or a planetoid or something. It was not a sun. Because I did see one complaint online that came across Twitter that said, Oh, but they've destroyed their son. How are they going to keep
Yeah.
That was not their
son.
This is part of the seven rings that is around this one. If you notice, there was one large son there.
Yeah,
that was
outside
not,
of it.
Was
I thought very
he
much
did not
that
implode their son.
Yeah, no, Akaten looked to me like it was Jupiter. And that these are the rings, or Saturn. These are the rings around Saturn. You know, so it's a gas giant. But the jack-o'-lantern thing, that was cool. I mean, it was a very...
Although if they did destroy it, the gravity field for the rings
would
disappear.
Well, but again, I don't know. But we're not going there. We're just going to...
Wait.
We fixed it, because we have a happy ending, and I didn't mind that either. The singing the stories and the idea of... We are to appease the god and you know, go through this, and that this is their religious belief that they're doing this, was fantastic. The music was great. Everything about this story I loved. But I got to the end, and there was some niggling little thing about the story, and I hope you guys can explain it to me, because I don't know what it was that I didn't like, but something was there that I didn't like. So it left me with just a hollow, empty, what just happened feeling.
I think it's the end.
I think that's it.
The end is just too rushed.
We've got a parasite here.
It needed to be longer than 42 minutes.
There's a parasite that's living in this, that's feeding on this belief structure that we've got. It's like, okay, I'm there with you. And people are, I've read some of the complaints that people are all up in arms about, and they said, it's a standard episode, it's blah, 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 and it doesn't have anything to do with science.
And it does have a lot, and they made...
That's just it.
They made the points throughout the episode of the science. Now, again... We're explaining a lot of things away with the atmospheric bubble and things like that. But the whole religious thing, I mean, they pretty much dismantled the religious aspect of this story throughout the course of the story.
Oh, yeah.
And
still not this was not one of those religious stories where people come up and say, oh, we believe in the power of the almighty slug. And you're looking at them going, really? But they set it up as a very reverent belief structure.
Yes.
That
oh,
this is what they have.
Yeah.
And even though the doctor does go through and go and knock those dominoes over,
right.
He leaves their belief structure intact.
Well, and had
it never becomes an issue of him forcing the entire group of people to go, you don't need to believe in this.
Had grandfather not gotten... Well, had the events not unfolded the way they would have, the doctor would have just let it play out and said, okay, you know, this is their religious beliefs and this is what they want to do. And it's beautiful. And
unlike Krall,
would have been
where,
that.
You know, we worship Krall. I must kill him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly.
It didn't have that. But there was just something about that we got to the end, and it wasn't even so much the click your heels together and believe kind of feel to it. It just something I don't know. Something didn't jive. And I walked away. I looked at him and I was like, what do you think? She goes, I loved it. I thought it was great. And I was like, yeah, I did too, I think. And I've dwelt on it for the last 3 days. Now, I haven't gone back and watched it again.
It sits better a second viewing.
Does it?
I have less of that, wait, what just happened, after a second viewing.
I think
viewing.
That's just what it... I think maybe you're right. I wanted 5 minutes even that just kind of helped explain it to me.
I enjoyed it all throughout all...
It was so good.
All the things you brought up, I appreciated. I thought some of the barking alien was... bit over the top.
No,
I like it.
I was thinking
while we're there, quickly.
Before I was thinking we could have gone with a little less with that and more of a resolution. But somebody bringing up Clara barking back to it, no, that has to stay in. It's perfect to show
it was
her
fantastic.
Character growth.
Did anybody wonder about the translation matrix not working there? Did you
a little bit?
It didn't even bother. It didn't even. Think
I wondered. It was like, oh, how come the because
like
I was
to.
Reminded of Pompeii because for whatever reason the layout of the market reminded me. Of the Doctor and Donna in Pompeii, and she makes that comment about, am I actually speaking Latin right now? They started barking, and I thought, wait a minute, how come the TARDIS isn't translating this? But then I let it go, because I was enjoying the ride so much.
I would have to suppose that the way that the TARDIS has been sort of brought, evolved in the story a little bit, you kind of get the impression that the TARDIS can kind of do what it wants to. So I kind of wonder if maybe sometimes it chooses not to, just for whatever its reason is for that.
Like maybe it doesn't like Clara.
Which somebody expressed in here as well.
Seems like it does.
I thought it was interesting that we address the whole fact that she goes back to the box, you're at the perfect hiding place, and notice the doctor was immediately ready in the snowman, just immediate ready to accept Clara and was going to give her the key. The key was the first thing that comes out, which shocked me in the snowman. Just shocked me. I thought, wow, that is
fast. He's never given anybody a key that fast. And he's like, this is, you know, here, take the key. That was the welcoming onto the TARDIS. You're going to go, you know, you're going to be my next companion. That was like the realization that we're two episodes in. Well, three technically because it's Snowman. But we're two episodes in and she tries to open the door and I thought,
she didn't have a key.
He attempted to give her the key in Victorian England, in that incarnation of Clara, she still doesn't have a key now. So that makes you kind of wonder if the doctor is a little hesitant.
Infatuated, to use Moffat's term, that he is with her, that he's still playing his cards a little close to the vest on that one, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt your stream.
What was my stream?
You were talking about all... You said you loved it.
I enjoyed all of these things about it. It's just either the effect used in the resolution or the fact that we don't... Okay, we gave him the ring, the leaf, and bam, he's gone. And then we're back home. I'm invested in these rings. I'm invested in this planet. Give me some resolution of the planet other than the vampire's gone. I need more of a resolution, and that's where I have issue with the episode. Everything else is fantastic.
Do you think vampire? This is the other thing I thought. Vampire when he calls it a vampire.
Well, that's when he was talking to the mummy, though. But he's still a parasite.
He was talking about. Well, yes.
No, because he didn't realize the grandfather entity. Was
yeah,
the.
That's true.
Do you think
didn't realize the mummy was just the alarm clock?
Yeah, vampire was not. That was more of a.
It was a metaphor, a little generic
vampire, yes. Not meaning. Because as soon as he said it, I went. Oh wait, we're not going there. No, okay, I had to bring it back down.
I had to assume it was a figure of speech.
Okay,
I thought that first two, and then as he continued, realized metaphorical.
We have done those yet.
His speech.
Oh, the speech was great.
The speech was fantastic. And of course, we talked a little bit about the Omega reference. Yes. I mean, I had there was no doubt in my mind that that piece of that speech was. Omega. I didn't go anywhere else with that except for Omega, where, you know, because he talks about how a universe where it's held together by the mind of a madman, was just clear enough as day for me to say, oh, he's talking about Omega, because that's what it was. Omega's will was what created and held together that anti-universe. That antimatter.
See, it was the first part of it. It was I've been to whole other universes where I went. Oh,
yeah,
where the laws of physics don't apply or something.
Yes. Where the laws of physics are made up by a madman. That's the line.
Okay, so it was all the way up to.
Yeah, I thought he said held together by.
No,
that.
Made up.
Okay, well, but still,
the way up to made up. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, cool, Omega. So it was up to that point.
Still awesome either way.
Yeah, no.
Either way,
there was no doubt in my mind that he was talking about
the what were they called the baddies the. The Vigil.
Vigil, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Scariest freaking new aliens ever.
The look was incredible.
I
wasn't scared by them. But.
Oh, I thought they were creepy. And the way they did that unison turn hunt.
And the whisper talk.
Oh, everything was so incredible. And I totally agree. Why were these guys not used in this episode? It was like you had this fantastic and you squandered it. That's my one complaint about that. Mm-hmm. That and when he's using the sonic to blast back whatever. Now, again, it's sonic. Whatever wave is coming out of them is obviously
the one part of that I had a problem with. Yeah, is that how they're explaining that way? Him holding the door up with it, I didn't have a problem.
Because he does the acoustic tumblers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was bam. The line that worked there.
Got no problem with the door.
It was the Vigil that was casting something at him, and he was holding them back with it.
Yeah,
and I went, okay, maybe that's a little over. Maybe that's a little convenient.
It's like using it as a Patronus to block off the Death Eater. You know, it's like
I guess
that one didn't get explained.
That part didn't. Okay. But also in a land where you sing
Dementors.
A God to sleep. Audio. It's sonic. It's still audio. I assume everything in this culture is audio based.
All right, that's reaching, but I'll buy it.
Okay.
They're singing a god to sleep.
Yeah, again.
Or trying to.
They think they're singing a god to sleep.
But...
Like I said, why couldn't you have used more of them? Or just, they were so cool! And then two appearances and done.
It was a cool vehicle. I would have liked to see more, but I didn't feel unfulfilled by them. I keep going back to this ending because it's it's strange that you guys feel like it was wrapped up too quickly, because to me, this whole, I mean, this whole buildup of the Doctor going in to fight, and oh, I got I got teary eyed when Mary goes back with Clara, and she turns and she goes and stands on the podium, and she says, "What are you doing?" She says, "I'm going to help him. I'm going to do," and she starts singing. And instead of in the song, she changes one of the words, and I can't remember what she changed it from, but she something about peace to my warrior. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, that was so cool. I mean, she's actually singing the Doctor's song now. It's no longer Grandfather's song. It's the Doctor. And so when he has, I'm getting chills now. And so when he has this wonderful speech, and he says, just have it all, have it all. And it takes it, and it does that little like, okay, it's full, and then it comes back. And I'm thinking, and the Doctor collapses, and I'm thinking, oh wow. This is one situation where the Doctor, with all his power, or all of his memories, or all of his anything that he could feed, it was not enough.
Did anybody else get a Torchwood vibe that it was kind of like Captain Jack feeding the life essence into
demon,
the demon monster, whatever it was, at the end of season one? He's just like, all you can eat buffet, go, and then he just gorged it to death. Nobody thought of that.
No,
I totally thought of that.
So then, because that's my least favorite episode of the season, I think I tried to block that one out of my head. But anyway, so then when Clara comes back and she's got the leaf, and it's simply that we've got some sort of parasitic entity that lives off of memories and emotion and feeling. And everybody for all of a millennia have given this thing what it wants based on their memories, based on everything in their past. And when you realize that the Doctor, even all of his memories isn't enough to fill him, when Clara comes back to the leaf and simply says, not just the memories that are before, but the infinite possibilities of what could be, that simply was enough for me that that's how you do it. That's how you're going to gorge it. Because now you have opened whatever its understanding of memories are to this whole new realm or possibility. And suddenly that's what's going to defeat it. Because, it's now we're talking infinite. There's a number of possibilities, and that's going to be too much for this parasite.
Yeah.
And that was simply enough for me to have that leaf be her one thing that's her connection, and that's what destroys it. I was fine with that.
I was fine with that, too. I just wanted some follow-up after that.
Well, what do you want in the follow-up? That's what I'm curious about.
I want to know that.
I mean, episode end, when the monster's god is gone.
I want to know that this civilization will be okay.
Are you wondering what happened to that nuclear sub in Cold War II?
No, they went to the South Pole and took the Doctor and Claire to the South Pole.
No, they didn't. Not in the condition.
The one thing that wraps the story up for me, and maybe this is where I went, is the fact that the civilization gave her the ring back because they wanted her to have it for what she did for them. That was almost the transference of reverence from their god to the reverence of her as being their savior.
Yeah,
that was simply all I needed. Was okay. They're going to go on and function as a society because they no longer need. They've gone from the Old Testament to the New Testament essentially for them, and that their savior has now gone on. And so it was kind of the wrap-up for me of how they never got that while watching it.
Well, to couch it in fairy tale terms, I don't come at it from the same direction that you are, Keith, from the standpoint of wanting to know what else happened to them. Because in a fairy tale, once you hit happily ever after, you're done.
You just accept it.
And I never liked that about fairy tales.
Well, but see, that's just it. There is no the sun comes up the next morning. It's just, you're done at that point, which is why I don't like Disney sequels that are based on classic fairy tales. You can't do that. You happily ever after, you're done. So when the story gives us the happily ever after, I'm fine with that part of it. It's just something transitioning from where we were up to that point that I think I'm still, maybe I just need to watch it again. Maybe there's something I missed or I didn't get. There's one piece of the puzzle that's not clicking for me, and I can't figure out what. And it's driving me nuts because I loved everything else about this episode.
But I need to go on record saying that I loved everything that you both just said about what all the wonderful things about this, and the emotions and the the Sonic moment when he pulls the Sonic out and he's like, do you have anything? Because I have this, but I'm really, but it comes in handy or whatever he says.
I almost wonder, because since we've established now that there have been two different, I mean, we got the emotional in the visitation when he says, oh, I feel like you've just killed my best friend. But then we've got that other moment where he opens up the cabinet and pulls one out, and the TARDIS just gives him a new Sonic. I mean, realistically, he can go get a new Sonic anytime he wants.
Yeah, so maybe he's tweaked and it's kind of got to a point.
Maybe he couldn't give it up because it didn't hold as much value as what would have been required, because he kind of knows that, well, yes, this is very important to me, but I can get another one.
I love that she says, she calls it his spanner. He goes, screwdriver. I absolutely squeed over the moment when he said, I came here with my granddaughter.
Yeah.
And then he runs off. And she's like, what? And runs and screws off. Wonderful name drop. So that, between that and the fact that Omega is name dropped in well as well so much. I love that. That was fantastic. I too, like, Clara's interaction with Mary was fantastic. The Doctor's interaction with weirdly, I don't have a problem with this story, except for one little itty bitty tiny thing. Okay, it's stupid. Because
here it comes.
You can explain. You guys will have a million things to explain to me why this is okay, but it bothers the heck out of me that we just had an episode where Clara and the Doctor are wearing helmets to ride a motorcycle in downtown London. Scooter in space. We have no helmets. Well, I guess it doesn't matter. In space, there's disregard for safety. I don't... That just... It,
what are you going to smash into the side episodes, of an asteroid?
Well, they almost crashed into the side of the temple. If the episodes hadn't been so close together, like one after the other, it probably wouldn't have bothered me. But right... One right after the other. We got helmets for this bike, but we don't have helmets for this bike.
They didn't have enough currency to rent the helmets.
Oh, okay.
That's what it was.
The ring only bought the bike.
It only bought the bike, yeah. Okay. That and the, you mentioned his, the speech, we've talked about the speech at the end and everything, but the tear up moment for me was when Claire is kind of defying him, but we stay and we fight. And he says, unless we are holding something so precious.
Yeah.
And censor, man, that one got me.
We don't walk away.
We don't walk away.
It's the lock. And then he says, no, but if we're holding on to something precious, we run.
We run, yeah.
I loved his speech to Mary about how she is special.
Yeah.
And how that this is such an 11th Doctor thing. And 9 and 10, too, say similar things. And really... all incarnations of the Doctor.
It's the respect for life. It's the respect for
everybody is special. I tweeted during Waters of Mars, it's kind of bizarre to hear the Doctor say little people. Because all of the Doctor, and it seems more, they seem to be hitting it more with the 11th era, of everyone's important. And I just love that.
That's what makes, I think, Waters of Mars so powerful.
Oh, yes.
Is the fact
how far he's fallen.
Well, it's not even so much the how far he's fallen. It's almost like he's lying to himself to convince himself that it's ultimately he's doing the right thing. It's like him convincing himself that I got to walk away from this. Well, I can fix it. You know, it's almost just that big headedness of I'm doing the right thing here, and he's trying to convince himself both ways. So,
regardless, it still seems like they're hitting on that you're everyone's special more frequent in 11. And I like it.
Now the fan expectations that I've seen have been very much kind of all over the map. I've seen people hated it from the science fiction standpoint that there wasn't enough science fiction in it. Which I disagree with.
Blah.
They hated
plenty of Who that didn't have near as much science.
They hated the idea of singing to a god. They hated the currency. I've seen people hate the setup of the planet. I've seen people hate on the design of the alien. I've seen people. I mean, just on one after another.
They can go sulk in their own corner.
That's quite honestly, it kind of goes back to what
they can go hang out with Christopher.
It goes back to what we've said before. It's like, you know what? If you're going to be that fan, I don't want you in my fandom. I really don't. I don't care. I celebrate everybody's right to enjoy or not enjoy something in their own way. But don't dog on somebody else. Don't hate on people because you didn't like it. Just come out and say, I didn't like it because of this. And then move on. I just... Unless it was written by Paul Haggis, then you have my permission to...
I mentioned last week how I thought the Bells of St. John had a different tonal feel to it. This almost feels more like the rest of the 11th Doctor era. And then we go back to the other tone
actually,
for Cold War.
This felt very unlike a lot of the 11th Doctor era, and maybe this is where some people are scooting off this, is because this was so off-world, because this was so alien, because this was so different than a lot of stuff we've seen, it didn't feel like the run-of-the-mill
hoe. A lot of people don't know it because it wasn't David Tennant, too.
Well, it felt a lot more... I think it's the fairy tale aspect of it, but it felt a lot different than a lot of the who I've been seeing lately. And I think it was a refreshing change for me, though.
I agree.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, no, I liked the feel.
It didn't feel RTD era, but it felt...
See, I thought Bells did,
it felt like a step away from... Even Moffat's.
It's two steps removed from really anything we've seen. This is, this is the most alien of any episode
we've
had in a long time.
Would be End of the World.
It's still set on Earth.
It's still above Earth, and there's the last human there.
Yeah.
But that's the only one that I can even closely compare it to.
That does feel very alien.
Yeah, this is the most far removed from anything. And maybe that's what people were just
I think
not jiving with because it was so far different from
what they're used to their who being Earth-based that it's bizarre for them not.
All right, quickly, final thoughts, and we'll move on to Cold War.
I enjoyed it.
I
liked it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Cold War. Dun, dun. Eh.
What?
I give it a dun, dun. Because... It was an enjoyable episode. It was a fanboy, ooh, the Ice Warrior, and he looks really cool. It was a, wow, that's a really, really great idea and way to take the Ice Warrior.
We've heard the story of Mark Gatiss comes to Stephen Moffat and says, okay, I want to bring back the Ice Warrior. And
he says,
Stephen's like, no. And he's like, listen to this. And the thing that made him go, heh,
it was
coming out of the suit.
It was totally, yeah, when that happens. And that's the cool thing is that when Clara is talking to, I totally forget this thing.
Field Marshal.
Sedlick.
Skalik, wasn't it?
Skalik.
Skadalik.
Skadalik. Right. Well, whatever. Whatever it was.
The Ice Warrior.
The Ice Warrior. When when she's talking to the Ice Warrior, and it's heads down, and I kept thinking, that's weird. Why would they do that? His mouth isn't moving. There was a couple of times I thought that, and it wasn't until she realized that he wasn't in there anymore, I went, oh, well, that's why his mouth wasn't moving. He's not in there anymore. So that was really cool.
And then all of a sudden, the whole head...
It was really, really cool, and it was a great idea, and I love that. I will be the first to tell you right now, it did not bother me that that they were not using Russian accents, because to me, if you're being translated in my head, you're going to sound like what I think you're going to sound like.
Only from the standpoint that in pretty much all the rest of Who, they've kind of sort of, even when we've complained about, oh my God, the American accents were so bad, they've attempted it. The Russian, I would have thought, would have been a very easy way to do it, I don't know.
It's a Kate Blanchett's accent.
Well, okay, I have no problem with Kate Blanchett's accent in Crystal Skull because she's Russian. All right, you had me to low. I'm there.
The problem is she is Russian and she's speaking. She's speaking English. I mean, so she's going to have that accent. But to me, if the TARDIS Matrix is translating in your head, it's just going to hear. Listen like it. Like every alien species that we've ever visited in classic Who
sounds British.
British, exactly. So
I think what you have is a high-minded concept for it, though. I really think you need to kind of dumb it down for the audience and go.
Perhaps,
they need Russian accents.
Perhaps that's right. But I mean, as soon as these David
Warner
way underused.
Yeah.
Yo, wow.
He was so wonderful. I loved him.
I got a weird crush on the guy. I thought he could have been any other actor in that role.
I love David Warner.
He could have been anybody.
I loved his character. You're absolutely right. He was underused, and he should have
been the guy from Game of Thrones.
They could have had any walk-on actor play that role, and it wouldn't have mattered.
I watched the same way about the character. Okay, I've seen some David Warner stuff. I'm not as familiar with the guy as you guys are, but I love him as Stark. He's a very powerful character in that. All these other little things that he's been in, I can remember how powerful of an actor he is. And then he comes on as the scientist, and he's barely used, and I thought, this is just a reason to get him on the show. It didn't have anything to do with needing him to be the character that he was, because it was like anybody could have been in that role.
So
anybody.
By that same rationale, you're saying that we didn't need Ian McKellen for the great intelligence.
I don't think we did. Although McKellen at least serves that very boisterous voice, that very powerful voice. But clearly you could have had Richard E. Grant done, because he's going to be it from here on out, so it doesn't really matter. So that was a bit disappointing. The fact that we brought this in and you guys pumped him up so much last week or 2 weeks ago, and then suddenly I'm like, well, that's too bad.
I'll agree with you there.
I did notice the music theme that everybody keeps talking about. I thought it was it felt forced to me in this one, and I felt like Phil said it was almost like a reason for General Lise Coleman to sing the lyrics to "Hungry Like a Wolf." I like where they were going there, but they didn't sell it to me as to why it was important.
Here's the problem with that scene is that, okay, we're in the...
Well, David Warner can't sing. That's
one problem. We're in the sub. We're sunk. We're not in trouble anymore. You are on the bottom. Now, you're not on the bottom as far down as you could go on the bottom, but you are grounded. The sub is sitting on the bottom of the ocean. Okay. And now we've got an alien, and it's loose, and it's crawling through corridors, and we're of all of the songs, you "Hungry Like the Wolf."
It was added to lighten the mood.
I love Duran Duran, I was perfectly fine with it. They're like my 10th favorite group.
It made me chuckle.
But think about that for a minute. There's a thing, and we don't have any experience with it, and it's lurking somewhere in the dark on the sub. "Hungry Like the..." No.
Bad song. Bad song choice. I love the coalition between...
Sing Rio.
The Britpop music. I love that. It was fantastic.
They could have done "View to a Kill," but that one hadn't come out yet. But I mean, find something other than "Hungry Like the..." Now, maybe it's just because it's 1983, so we needed to really drive home. That was the big hit.
I think that's what it was.
But,
I'm going to address the TARDIS disappearing, because... this is simply the TARDIS tumbling off of the cliff, or this is simply the TARDIS sinking into the sand, or into the muck, or the acid, or whatever. Yeah. This is simply the TARDIS falling into the center of the Earth. This is simply what it is.
We need to get her out of the way.
Because if you don't get her out of the way, you've got the most convenient escape route ever, and that you can't do that. And I kind of chuckled with the way that Eleven plays it off at the... Was it even at the end that he really kind of explains what he did?
Yeah, it's at the end.
I love that he plays that off, and he performs it in such a way that I was like, yeah, I buy that. That's totally something whimsical and silly that this little doctor would do. He would be in the TARDIS tinkering around going, what can I do? I'm kind of bored. You know, I really ought to fix that one piece that one piece is broken and fix it. And he happens to accidentally, purposely fix the thing that gets the TARDIS out of the way if danger's coming. Now, it's very in the 11th Doctor's character to think, wow, that was probably not a good idea. I will disable that as soon as we find the TARDIS again. So I was okay with that. But this is simply Mark Guinness saying, I've got to get the TARDIS out of there, or it's simply a way for him to get out.
Well, because you're on a sinking submarine. We're all going to die. Well, everybody in the TARDIS.
Everybody in the TARDIS. We've got plenty of room.
And Ice Warrior will take you back 5,000 years.
Well...
He even kind of alluded to the fact that we could help you. I honestly
forgot the TARDIS disappeared at one point. I was like, well, yeah, that's what he's going to do.
This one felt like the run-of-the-mill episode for me. This was just a running through corridors. I don't even know that it was well done. It was adequately done for me. I was so excited about the Ice Warriors coming back.
And
this was a wonderful way to do it.
I remember you said that when the Cybermen episode
I completely agree with the fact that they just had one, and that they addressed it in kind of the way they did with Dalek. And in fact, I was the same way as somebody else had mentioned in feedback. I almost expected her to just maybe start to make a connection with it. And they would kind of go that way. I might have been a little... when it comes out of the armor, it was one of those moments of, wow, I didn't see that coming, but I should have seen it coming, because I saw a production clip of the hands on somebody, the little fingers
somebody.
Oh. But I think, in my head, I went to, oh, there's something else on the ship, and the Ice Warrior is going to end up helping them, or is chasing that down, or something like that, because I didn't know they had thawed it out of the ice. So I thought that's where they were going to go with that. But when it wasn't in the armor anymore, it clicked in my head, oh, that's what I saw. That's what it looks like.
Was it?
Love the fact that they didn't show us. I love the fact that we just saw the face.
Just the face.
The hands.
It's one of the reasons why I loved Cloverfield and everyone else hated it.
Very Hitchcocky and very...
Yeah, just I as soon as it got out, I looked at Mel and was like, please, for the love of God, do not show me a naked Ice Warrior. I don't want to see what it looks like. I was astonished when that suit opened up. Never in a million years would I have thought that suit was going to open up. And I'm so glad we didn't see it.
I have a couple of design issues.
With the
redesign? Yeah. Is it me, or is the fingers of the suit much shorter than the fingers in the thing? It's like he's having to operate the suit with the tips of his fingers.
Never mind the fact that he's got three fingers and the gauntlet is five.
Is it five?
No,
or that
the gauntlet
was
wasn't five.
Yeah, it
the
is.
Gauntlet was three. It was three.
It's four.
Because
and a thumb.
What they did is they did before in the old days it was the claw.
Yeah, it was just the claw. Yeah.
What they've done is they've split the claw.
Just
and
three.
It is three.
I'm pretty sure it's fingers. I'll look it up. You can
go ahead.
Continue to talk.
That and. I didn't know what I didn't like about the new design suit, just looking at it. But seeing it in action, I now know. There's not enough upper lip. It's just it's like cut off right at the top, like where the mouth is, and you only see the jaw.
You've seen the old Ice Warriors,
yeah,
you?
There's a bit more. No, there's more. You see more of the lip.
Oh. Well, that's...
It's a small thing.
That's not so bad.
But it's like, it's just... It just seems very... It just doesn't... It doesn't seem smooth to me. I don't know.
Okay.
I like the story overall, though.
The idea of, oh, it's going to be Ice Warrior. What do you do? Something different of a big lumbering beast wandering around.
Oh, yeah. That's the only way you can do it.
Well, even keeping it in the confines of a submarine was genius.
Yeah.
Because
that was a much bigger submarine than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. you can't... It's easier to lumber in... a tight, claustrophobic, confined space because you have to versus, oh, look, we're running from an Ice Warrior across the field because I cannot run. You give me some room, I can run. I'm on a sub. You can't go anywhere.
Well,
so that steady, progressive nature of da-dun, 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 I mean, it's going to get you. I had no problems with that, but then taking it out of the suit was an added...
Taking it out of the suit, I thought, made it scarier.
Oh, yeah. And
I
it was so much
so
faster.
Too, surprisingly enough.
Yeah.
You out of its armor, it's scarier? That seems strange. That, it seems almost backwards, but...
And I like how the doctor admitted when he was talking about, well, it seems like a poor design flaw. I'm surprised they've never fixed it with the electric.
Right, exactly. That was fantastic. You know? I love that.
Oh, so the Sonic.
A lot of harkening back.
Did you guys have problems with the Sonic going red and being able to blow up the
Other than I wondered why it had to go red.
The color is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I didn't have a problem with it because...
Is it because did you guys key in on the fact that he talked about the suit being sonically tuned to program that in order to operate it? And so he says, yeah, the suit, the armor. So he says, I've got Sonic too.
Oh, I do remember that.
Yeah.
So that makes it okay.
He kept doing a lot of the analyzing type thing with it, flipping it out and then looking and flipping it out and looking and flipping it out and looking.
Yeah, he did a lot of that.
And I was almost
that
hoping.
Was,
but
it, that but it's was
almost like
more.
He was doing it so often, it's almost like he wasn't getting any readings.
Yeah. And that's probably certainly true.
I was almost hoping.
Because he never read anything.
He just
never
kept doing
water.
It. And I was like,
When we got the shot of it being submerged, I was almost hoping that Gatiss wrote it out too.
Yeah, I thought really that's where they were
for most of
it.
He did.
It wasn't until the professor gives it back to him.
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, you've got it."
And the Barbie doll.
All right. So yeah. So did
that's a problem I had with the Akatakan.
Was there any reason for
he has so much stuff in his pockets? How is the Sonic the only thing he had? They were pulling all sorts of stuff out of his pockets.
Yeah, but nothing was. Nothing had any value.
Surely there's something buried in there somewhere.
Maybe you guys can clarify this for me because clarify. What happened? I've only seen this once, so I apologize. I've seen all the other ones several times because I've been rewatching them this week, but this one I only had a chance to see once this weekend. What caused Clara to pass out there at the beginning?
I don't quite get it.
You didn't get it either. Okay, good. She passes out, falls down. It's like she
bumps her head or something.
Yeah, it's like a weird transition because we see the Sonic fall under the water, and then suddenly they move on. The doctor's okay. Everybody's okay. She's waking up. It was like, what was the point of that moment?
From what I remember of it, because I've seen it now twice, it was less jarring the second time, and it was kind of like part of the ship still settling.
Yeah.
And so it was like that
settling.
What's the
point of knocking her out, though? Story-wise, that's what I have a problem with.
Story-wise, I don't know.
I see what caused it, maybe, by that explanation. But what's the point story-wise? It seems like there needed to be a reason for her to be knocked out.
They needed a lull in the story somehow.
It was like we needed a passage of time, but we don't know how to do it. But then when she wakes up, it's almost like it was like 5 minutes later. Yeah. It didn't act like she was out for very long.
I have very, very, very few complaints with this story. I really liked everything about this. I mean, yes, getting rid of the TARDIS was kind of a convenient trope. Little things like that. I love that. What was the one that you brought up that you were like, why did this happen? Not Clara, but that one.
What did I bring up?
I don't remember. You said something that you hit on, and I was like, yeah, I didn't care for that either. The pacing. That was the one thing that I thought was a little uneven, because it's almost, I mean, and again, the confines of the story, I understand where we're going with it and why we did it this way, but it opens as kind of this big action movie, and it's a sub-movie. And first of all, I love sub-movies. Hunt for Red October and Crimson Tide and Das Boot, and I love sub-movies. Any sub-movie, I love them. Just automatically, it's got an in with me.
UB-50,
U-40, yeah, that UB-40?
One. UB-40?
UB, no.
Wasn't it?
U-571.
571.
Yeah, I liked that one. I liked K-19, The Widowmaker. I just sub-movies. I love sub-movies.
Which was the comedy one? Was that McHale's Navy?
It was a Periscope.
Oh, yeah, that one.
I liked that one.
Was that Kelsey Grammer?
That was Kelsey Grammer.
I love sub-movies. So we open with the sub-movie, and it's very action-y. It's an action sub-movie.
Well, once it starts, there's no stopping until Clara gets knocked out.
Yeah.
It's action, 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 action.
And I think that's the transition point. Once she comes up, then all of a sudden, it's not an action movie anymore. There's a thing on the sub-movie. But that's not even quite accurate, because we kind of get that before the thing gets loose bit.
Right.
So it's got a different feel to it there. Well, then it becomes the...
A lot of the action is because the thing gets loose.
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't become a base
that's
under
true.
Siege.
You're right, yeah.
But it's alien. It's predator. And do you notice the predator noises that it made? I thought that was really a cool addition
that's
to the
what
Ice
it was.
Warrior.
I was trying to place where the
where
sounds.
It would click. It would, you know.
Oh, I didn't.
You didn't know the
almost reptilian clicking.
Well, because it would hiss. It would do the hzzz and kind of
which it had. Nice subtle references to the way the Ice Warriors used to talk.
Yeah.
And way.
That's right.
Talks
I do remember
now.
The hissing. It didn't click really to me, but I remember
it's not when it was talking.
But it wasn't a. It was a. You know, it was more like a snakish thing.
Well, yeah, it was just an extra noise because
it kind of had a bit of smoke everything. Monster clickiness sound
it,
to
when
it.
When it talked, it didn't hiss.
No.
It did in the old days. No.
Well, some. There was
at the beginning, but you notice that whole conversation with Sarah or Clara, it didn't. It was weird. It was like
there's times they remembered to keep it in, and times they didn't.
Well, but I mean, it didn't bother me. It wasn't a deal breaker.
They did the hissing, and I was like, oh, look, it's a nice reference. And then I never paid attention again if they
after that.
Did it.
But I liked the fact that when it was not speaking, and it was just, and it was just this rattle, this predator-like rattle. It was like, okay, cool. It felt like Alien. I mean, we've got this thing running around the ship, and it's now out of the suit, and it's probably doing tentacle things. Again, thank you for not showing it. So all of that, but there was just something, the transition between the action bit to the middle bit to the base under siege kind of bit with the hunt part of it. And then we've got a whole different movie at the end with this ratcheted up nuclear tension and the Cold War actually coming into play.
Almost going back to a sub-movie.
Yeah. I mean, that part to me, I think, felt just a little uneven because it couldn't settle on one genre. It couldn't make up its mind, it almost felt like, as to what type of episode it wanted to be. Other than that, I didn't really have any complaints. And I can't find a good picture of the Ice Warrior's hands. You may be right. There may be only three. A cocoon
ending.
They're going to come lift the sub out of the water. I didn't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
They needed a way to get the sub back to the surface.
There
the
was
alien
no
showed up.
Other
okay.
way you could do it.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It felt a little trope again too, but it was fine.
It was all right.
But again, it really felt like just an average. It just felt like a run of the mill Doctor Who movie or episode for me. So
wow, if this is run of the mill, we watch the greatest television show in the history of TV.
Well, we do.
Yeah, I
liked Rings of Akaten. That
Akhenaten.
I like Akhenaten so much that maybe I had set my hopes up higher for this one, but it was good. I enjoyed it. I would give it a 3 out of 5 for certain, and even maybe more.
I love the fact that we've spoiled Ice Warriors returning in the episode. Okay.
And they get right to it.
Yeah.
they don't
no
wait.
Monkeying around with it.
Pre-credit sequence.
There's no, you know, they're coming. There's no, what'd you think, what'd you find in the ice? A mammoth? Yeah, it's a mammoth.
Yeah, it's a
and
mammoth.
We're all going, yes, it's a mammoth.
And immediately.
We've seen this happen before.
Immediately. Here's the guy, lonely crewman number 6, going, I'm going to defrost you now.
Yeah.
Because that's a good idea.
That seemed weird, though.
I didn't care.
I thought he was going to be some sort of, like, reason for him to be, oh, yeah, we're going to do this
didn't
now.
Didn't care. It was, let's get to the ice. And boom, yeah. The arm comes through the ice. I was like, we're already there.
Anything to keep it from dragging it out.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, we all know. Oh, there's something in the ice. Oh, I wonder what it is.
Yeah.
Anybody else get a little bit of a shade of Seeds of Doom? Because we found something in the ice and they brought the block out. And
I could see that a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
You kind of have to do it for Ice Warriors.
I didn't get it at the time.
Oh, you didn't?
I was going to say, I just
kind of have to. It was an Ice Warrior.
Went back to Ice Warriors.
That was my default setting. It was like, oh, this is just like the, because there's a hallway and a thing down there. Yeah, this is just like the Crinoids.
Oh, there's a big block of ice and they're trying to thaw them out. That's what I went to, was the Ice Warriors.
It's a mammoth. Are you kidding? And then the scientist even admits, I thought I'd found a mammoth. No, you didn't. I've seen mammoths in museums. They
look not
that
like small.
That. It was an upright. It was not even a. What are we? A baby mammoth? Was this the mammoth the Flintstones had under the sink doing the dishes? This was not a mammoth. But yes, David Warner. That was the other thing. David Warner being underused. I was almost.
Oh, yeah.
There is an Eighth Doctor adventure, Big Finish story that David Warner's in. Playing a scientist.
Well, there's an upcoming Fourth Doctor one.
That happens to feature Ice Warriors. Oh. And I wondered if this wasn't supposed to be the same character. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not, but...
Oh, that's too bad.
I kind of wondered maybe if that's where they were going once they kind of established that he's the scientist on the boat. I was like, oh.
That's too bad.
But
any closing thoughts on this story?
Loved it.
Very enjoyable.
Very enjoyable.
I think this is the it's interesting in a way that we did these two together this week. Because I think... The fanboy expectations and disappointments with Rings of Akhenaten are not warranted. And I think the fanboy gushing that
over
I've heard over Cold War is not
warranted.
Quite honestly, that's where we're at with both
agree.
Of these. Is this one's not as bad as everybody made it out to be, and the other's not really quite as good as everybody made it out to be. I loved both stories.
Well said, Sean. I think that's exactly right.
I wonder if some people didn't like Rings because they were hoping or expecting something more Pyramids of Mars-esque.
Well, the title really kind of alludes to one thing, and I don't know why.
We saw promotional images of the mummy
preview,
and
and it's done in the Egyptian style font on the poster
and
all that kind of stuff.
I mean, just look, not
we just
at
had
the
we just had that Indiana Jones feel to it, and then immediately right off the bat we land, we open up, and here's a star field and planet and rings, and he goes, these are the Rings of Akhenaten, and I went, oh, okay. I mean, it's like the Bells of St. John's. It's a total misnomer on that title. It's like, we threw you this, but we're actually going over here. Now, Cold War was kind of an obviously needed pun on the events of what were happening,
right,
as well as
right.
There's Ice Warriors in it. So,
yeah. Cold and Cold War.
Cold and Cold War.
All right. Well, we have opted to, because Keith's on
time constraint,
we did shove 2 episodes in this week. We are going to hold off on our Prisoners of Time issued 3 discussion this week. We'll try to finish it off to next week, which we might actually kind of overload us next week, because we will be reviewing next week's episode, which is
Hyde.
And then if we do Prisoners of Time issue 3, we're also on that schedule have the audio adventure in the Destiny of the Doctor series, which is... Anybody remember the name
Big
of that?
Big Finish, Destiny of the Doctor. I just posted it on our website. What was the name of that?
Well, either way, we're doing the next
third Vengeance of the Stones. Yeah,
Vengeance of the Stones, which is Yates. Captain Yates.
Is performing that one.
So,
and the Doctor Who Revisited.
Oh, we still have that on
We still have that as well for next week. So next week will we kind of become our big big third Doctor retrospective.
Hopefully Hyde is not...
Maybe we should save the actual our retrospective.
The retrospective isn't even that week. The retrospective is next week.
We're not making that mistake again. So that being said, with those items, what's coming up next week, Sean?
All right. So next week, the revised schedule, which I just posted. Thanks for changing that, Gwen.
Well, just that one piece.
The revised schedule. We will do Friday Night Who next week is the Time Warrior. With John Pertwee, so that we can get into our kind of celebration this month of the Third Doctor, even though, yes, we've already reviewed it. For the episode next week, we will actually be discussing the IDW Prisoners of Time issue number 3. We will be discussing Doctor Who Revisited with John Pertwee, and a look at his time. We will be discussing the Big Finish, Destiny of the Doctor, Vengeance of the Stones, and we will be discussing new series episode Hyde. So that's the lineup for next week. After that is The Edge of Destruction for Friday Night Who with William Hartnell, because it's a TARDIS episode, and that will pair up nicely with our Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, which we get did on doing purpose. So the following week, then, will be our actual 50th anniversary Let's Talk John Pertwee, and then Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Yes.
Now, the poll is up on Facebook. So, for those of you that may have been wondering or maybe just didn't notice, yes, we're doing the poll. That's the standard question of what was the most evocative or iconic or quintessential Third Doctor story. Again, we've limited to ones that we've reviewed and that Keith has seen, so you can go and vote on our Facebook page now.
Very good. Anything else we want to add this week before we get
Yeah, I don't want you to vote for every episode on the list. That's what I'd like to add.
Did you set it up so they can't do multiple?
No, I didn't set it up.
All right, anything else? All right, well, if that's going to do it for this week, until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Hockin' hot.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.